You're listening to a podcast from the Journal of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. I'm Kim Curry, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal, and welcome to Here's the Issue, featuring our September 2021 issue of the Journal. This month, I thought we'd feature one of the research studies that appear in the Journal this month, and this study is entitled Knowledge, Attitudes, and Practices Related to Human Papillomavirus Vaccination Among College Students in a U.S. State University, Implications for Nurse Practitioners. And my guests today are two of the authors of the study, Maria Poggio-Derrico, who's the Director of Simulation and Scholarship at UBSim, a healthcare simulation and virtual reality company headquartered in Montreal, Canada. Also with us is Ron Derrico. He's an assistant professor of nursing at the University of Nevada at Las Vegas and the program director of the Psych Mental Health and Family Nurse Practitioner Tracks in that program. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Now, your co-authors on this study were Wei-Chin Tung and Mingyan Liu, and together with the two of you, you did this very nice research study of HPV vaccine and HPV infection knowledge and attitudes in college students. And as we know, human papillomavirus is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the United States, and it really disproportionately affects adolescents and young adults. And although a safe and efficacious vaccine is available, many college students are unimmunized against HPV. Most students presenting to college health centers are within the age range for catch-up immunizations, and this gives nurse practitioners in those settings an opportunity to increase the vaccination rates. More information is needed, though, about college students' HPV knowledge, attitudes, and their vaccinations so that nurse practitioners can make effective vaccine recommendations to this population. So the purpose of your study was to kind of understand the knowledge and attitudes about HPV and the HPV vaccine, and to look into HPV immunization practices, and also look at the factors associated with knowledge and attitudes among these students at the university. So you used a cross-sectional quantitative design, and you collected data from participants in a state university student health center, and you were able to collect data on 627 students. And results showed that participants had a moderately low HPV knowledge, but positive attitudes toward HPV and the vaccine. It also looked as though participants with a higher level of knowledge tended to be born in the United States, tended to be in health-related majors, the students tended to be married or divorced, and those with a higher level of knowledge had a positive attitude toward vaccines. You also found that higher HPV knowledge and vaccine uptake and a family history of cervical cancer were associated with positive attitudes toward the vaccine. And you noted that predictors for vaccine uptake included being a health-related major and having positive attitudes toward vaccines. I was really interested in featuring this study because it pertains to vaccines. We're doing this podcast in August 2021 during an increased number of cases of the Delta variant of COVID-19, and when the FDA has just given full approval to the Pfizer COVID vaccine. Since last January, when the vaccine became widely available, both the Pfizer and other vaccines, we've learned a lot in this country and worldwide about attitudes towards vaccination. Your study really speaks to that. In fact, I checked earlier on the web today in anticipation of this podcast, and it looks like the latest statistic shows that overall in the United States, about 52.4% of people have had a COVID vaccination in some way, shape, or form. So we're still way under what we could be because there's so many free vaccines available out there. And so I thought these two things, you know, clearly had a relationship. And I really want to talk about this with you because your topic, while it's about a different virus, the HPV virus, it's related to vaccines and vaccine attitudes, clearly. So maybe you can talk to us for a minute about what gave you the inspiration and the motivation to complete this particular study.
I worked in college health as both a registered nurse and family nurse practitioner for several years. And so my patient population was mostly people in late adolescence and young adulthood, which is an age demographic that is disproportionately affected by HPV. And I was really surprised to see that although we have a very safe and effective HPV vaccine that is supposed to be administered routinely in early adolescence, I saw firsthand many unvaccinated students that were infected with HPV and had their lives impacted by HPV-related illnesses. For example, genital warts and abnormal cervical pap smear results. And it was really hard to see this as a healthcare provider because these patients could have been protected from HPV-related illnesses if they had previously received the HPV vaccine. And I found when speaking with my patients about HPV and the vaccine that they didn't know much about the virus or the option to receive a vaccine that could prevent an HPV infection. And so my experience as a healthcare provider in College Health really sparked the inspiration and motivation for this research study. And when speaking with Roan, my co-researcher, about this project, he had seen similar things in the clinical practice. And so really it was our experiences as a clinician that sparked the motivation for this study because we wanted to ultimately understand more about college students' HPV knowledge, attitudes, vaccination uptake so that nurse practitioners and other healthcare providers could really make effective vaccine recommendations to this vulnerable population.
I can certainly understand the need for that. I've spent some time in College Health myself, and I can relate to the type of problems that you see. Yeah. You know, another thing I found interesting about your study was your ability to garner such a good sample size for this study, given that it was in a real life population of college students, and they tend to be surveyed a lot and they don't always want to participate in a lot of things. So I bet a lot of other nurse practitioners out there who are doing some science would like to hear how you managed to do your sampling. Did you do it for an extended period of time, or did you offer incentives, or how did you go about being able to get that volume of students to participate?
So we had the opportunity to conduct our research at a College Health clinic where both myself and Roan had worked for several years as family nurse practitioners. So we understood the clinic well, and we also had stakeholder buy-in from the amazing clinic leadership, as well as the interprofessional healthcare team that staffed the clinic. So it really was an environment that supported the research project. We did not offer any incentives. We just understood the clinic flow well. We conducted the survey for a month. And since we understood the clinic flow well, we really knew an opportune time to administer the surveys that would help support the participants if they wanted to choose to complete the survey, as well as not disrupt clinic flow. So how this clinic worked is that when students came in for their healthcare appointment, they would check in and they would complete intake paperwork. And then there was a small window of time when they would be waiting to see their healthcare provider. And we really felt that this was an opportune time to offer the survey to those that were willing to participate, because there wasn't really any competing demands for their attention during that time. Also, the timing of the study was very important. So this was a student health clinic that was located on the campus of a large metropolitan university. And the patient census of that clinic really mirrored the academic calendar. For example, during spring break and during the summer, there were often less patients that would come to the clinic. And we did this survey during the month of February, which was in the middle of the spring semester. And we knew that was a time when the clinic was generally very busy.
Those are some great tips right there. I mean, I can really picture how this could happen because, first of all, you knew your audience very well. And then the second thing is you had a lot of cheerleaders and champions around. You had that support from that component of the organization. And so I think right there are some good tips for people that are thinking about doing real-time research. It's always a struggle for people to make things happen. You can design all the studies you want, but if you can't implement them, you're not going to have meaningful information. And so those are some great ideas for things that you can overcome or things that you need to do to put the effort into to be able to get that kind of sampling. Thank you.
And Kim, we had one interesting finding during this process. We had this both as a paper, a pencil and paper survey, as well as a survey that could be completed electronically from the student's phone or laptop or tablet. Given the age demographics, we sort of made the assumption that students would prefer the electronic form. form and that the paper forms wouldn't be as necessary because this is the young millennial generation, everybody's electronic. And what we actually found was we had very low survey completion electronic, and there was vast preference for the pencil and paper version. So we don't necessarily have an explanation for that, but the students overwhelmingly, and as you know, we got a very solid sample size, but they overwhelmingly preferred the good old pencil and paper form. So it's good motivation for us to make sure we had plenty of those on hand.
Isn't that interesting? I would not have guessed that. Well, maybe they're just sick of screen time or something. I don't know, but that's a great thing to point out, because offering an alternative method for completing it could make all the difference, it sounds like. That's great.
Absolutely.
Now, in your published article, you talk about attitudes toward vaccines, especially those positive attitudes that we want to cultivate. And that really interested me because it impacts the willingness to be vaccinated, clearly. So can you describe those attitudes for everyone? Where do you think those attitudes come from? What generates them? And of course, what do you think we can all do as providers to help impact attitudes toward vaccination? That's the $64 question, right?
So attitudes in this context are how an individual feels about HPV and HPV vaccination. Examples of these attitudes are whether someone feels that contracting the HPV virus is serious and life-threatening, or whether they believe that they should get the HPV vaccine. And individual attitudes are shaped by life experiences and knowledge levels. In our study specifically, we found that higher levels of HPV knowledge, as well as a family history of cervical cancer, were associated with positive attitudes towards HPV vaccination. Overall, among our participants, we found that they had a moderately positive attitude towards HPV vaccinations. As an example, more than half of our participants felt that the vaccine was efficacious and could prevent cervical cancer. And the majority said that all primary care providers should recommend the vaccine to their patients. And the students even said that they would recommend the HPV vaccination to their friends. But interestingly, only 38% of the participants agreed that they were susceptible to an HPV infection. And this is really consistent with previous research showing that college students generally identify as having a low self-perceived risk for acquiring HPV. In addition, our participants also had moderately low knowledge of HPV in the vaccine. And so the low HPV knowledge combined with a low self-perceived risk for contracting HPV likely contributed to the suboptimal levels of HPV vaccine coverage that we saw among our participants, because only 30.5% received at least one dose of the HPV vaccine.
So as nurse practitioners, we found that while the students may have a positive attitude towards vaccination, the education piece really came to the fore because we found that close association between knowledge of HPV, knowledge of the vaccination, and knowledge of their risk level. So even if positively inclined, they would have a positive feeling towards HPV vaccination, but they wouldn't consider themselves at risk, and they wouldn't have a high knowledge necessarily about how you contract HPV and what are some of the negative effects of HPV. So we in this profession are really in a key role where we can educate our adolescents, our students, our young adults, so that they have that knowledge level. And hopefully, as our research has shown, that is correlated with an increased uptake of the vaccine.
That's a great point too. And I think one of the things to me that's a take-home point of this is you're clearly limiting your study to the population that you focused on, which is correct. But you got to wonder how much this applies to other age groups, right? So it's easy for us to sit here and say, well, it's probably because they're college students. I mean, that's a mistake I might make, you know, that they feel like they're, you know, quote unquote, bulletproof, right? And so like you're identifying, there's two components. Is it serious? And am I likely to catch it? Is that kind of what you're saying, right? So I understand it. I know something about it. I get that it's serious, but then also, do I think I might get it?
Absolutely.
To me, that could be applied to a lot of other populations. My brain keeps going back to COVID, of course. And we have all seen so many news reports about people dying of this viral illness. And so you have to ask if maybe we should be addressing more of the other side of the population, because I perceive, and maybe other people do too, that perhaps even in other age groups, not just the younger age groups, that you know, it can't happen to me type of mentality is maybe one of the things that we're dealing with. So I just see a lot of parallels here, and not just that other vaccine preventable disease, but many, many others, right? So I think you're picking up on something really key, which is there's more than one component to will I or won't I get an immunization?
Yes, definitely.
So what do you think are some important take-home messages, other than what you've just spoken about, for nurse practitioners and other providers, just in terms of any implications for practice that they could take from this?
So it's important for nurse practitioners and other healthcare providers to remember that their recommendation for HPV vaccination is extremely important. As a trusted source of evidence-based information, nurse practitioners and other healthcare providers can really make a difference in increasing HPV knowledge, attitudes, and ultimately vaccination rates. Also, the recommendation from a knowledgeable peer could really make a big difference. So if practicing in college health, you could consider starting a peer education program. And good candidates for peer educators could be nursing students or students of other health professions, because our study found that health-related majors had a higher level of HPV knowledge, as well as more positive vaccine attitudes. And so they could really make a difference by providing education to their peers.
That's a good point. And those, like you're mentioning, those two things kind of go hand in hand. If they know more about it, it sounds like the attitudes kind of maybe follow at some point after that, the positive attitudes toward the immunizations. Yeah.
Yeah. And in other research that we've published, we found that a lack of recommendation was considered a serious barrier to vaccine uptake in these populations, in addition to the lack of knowledge that we've addressed here. And that research also found that a recommendation from a healthcare provider, including a nurse practitioner, was a considerable move towards reducing the barriers to vaccine uptake. So combined with that research and this research, it just really reinforces the role that the nurse practitioner plays in whatever setting we're practicing in to educate our patients, to increase their knowledge, to let them make an educated risk management decision on their health, and hopefully, you know, increase the uptake of these very important vaccines.
Yes. And I would imagine that we've read studies before about how the more providers recommend it, you know, getting the message repeatedly helps with lots of health behavior changes. And I would include vaccine uptake, you know, in that. And so it's not just saying it's available, but it's encouraging it. And it may be the need to encourage it repeatedly and to follow up on other people encouraging it to get people over the hump, as it were, to go ahead and accept the vaccine. I think that those are maybe some opportunities for other studies in the future. Did you have any ideas for things that you wanted to look at as a result of the completion of this research?
Well, something that I'm interested in looking at in my role as a simulation educator is always in providing experiential learning to healthcare providers or students of healthcare professions so that they can really translate that into their practice. And so what I'm looking at is developing a simulation on vaccine hesitancy related to the HPV vaccine that will give learners an opportunity to practice providing an effective recommendation to patients that might not want to get the HPV vaccine. And so providing them with education and reasons why the vaccine would be needed.
That's a fantastic idea. And I can see that being applied to a lot of things, especially in primary care type of areas, such as family nurse practitioner programs and adult gero primary care and other programs, because so much of that role is education. So much of the healthcare that we have to provide has to do with basic knowledge and ability to manage one's own health. And so that sounds like a great idea for a simulation experience. That's a good take-home point. I like that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. And I want to thank all of our listeners and be sure to look for more podcasts from the Journal of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners.